Blog Talk Radio.
From Kerry Clark later. And will we have Legend on tonight at 9 or not?
Legend is on tonight.
Okay.
So I saw him yesterday, so I do know that the Ayatollah of college rock and roller will be in the house with us this evening.
Well, we have the entire complement of the square pegs, round holes. It's a little bit, I've heard some of the other media members call this the silly season, as coaches get fired and there's really not an awful lot to talk about in between now and the championship game. But there are a couple of Bama highlights that we can relay if you've been out there doing Christmas shopping, you haven't had a chance to keep up with the blog sites.
I'm covered head to toe with Elmer's glue all, trying to glue stuff together. And I believe Kerry is on with us. Kerry, Brother Clark, how are you?
Hello, Bird. How you doing, buddy?
Doing good. We're broadcasting high from the Holiday Inn in MD Anderson, New Texas tonight. So again, the square pegs of the round holes are all over the place. Are you from your cage, or where are you tonight?
Yes, I'm at the Casa Clark.
Casa Clark. Well, we are again from four sheets to the wind, and that's with no alcohol. Let's see, Thomas down in Mobile, Blip is up in the ulterior bird cage. You're over at the office, correct, Blip?
Yep.
So we're spread all over the place. I love it. It's the only radio show done from consistently from five different spots in America. So you gotta love it. Anyway,
we're just that badass.
Look at what? The fat ass?
No, we're just that badass.
I'm looking around the room, and all I see is Mrs. Bird, and she does not have a fat ass.
Well, my hope is that Kerry has some insight from the All-Star game that is getting ready to transpire. Let's start with the big news, really what is most of the Bama blogs today have the headline talking about the announcement coming from A.J. McCarron. A.J. making it official today. He's coming back. AJ will return for his senior year after the championship game. Win or lose, AJ will be our quarterback next year. And
yay.
I think that that sets a huge, huge precedent for recruiting. I mean, if you're Robert Foster and you think you can come in and contribute as a true freshman and make an impact right away, who do you want throwing you the ball?
AJ.
And I think it has a huge influence on what will be a rebuilt, retooled offensive line. I mean, the quarterback, if they're sharp, the quarterback can keep a young, untested offensive line together and keep them on their toes, making the right calls, moving people around, making adjustments. So AJ will be, I think, an integral part in breaking in some of the new offensive linemen that will step into DJ Fluker, Chance Warmack, and Barrett Jones' shoes. I know, speaking of DJ Fluker, I know that DJ and Eddie Lacy are indicating that they will come out, and as juniors, they will test the waters and try the NFL draft. So those two underclassmen for sure, really leaving the only question mark amongst the – there were four juniors that we thought would come out. D. Milliner is for sure gone. Fluker, Lacy, A.J. – well, let me say five. The fifth is C.J. Mosley. And C.J. really is the only one of the juniors that we're unsure on. We know where everybody else is going. Today also marks on ESPN.com, for those of you who follow it closely, Todd McShay's first mock draft. So all this talk about the juniors coming out and AJ staying and who's going to get drafted, we're starting to get a lot of speculation, and we're deep enough now into the NFL season that we're starting to get a sense of which teams will draft in which positions in the 2013 NFL draft. So,
and what the needs are, not only that.
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just what position they're drafting in, but what kind of players are going to be looking for. So, you know, it's the dance party has started with the NFL as of right now.
Well, I value Todd McShay's opinion about as much as I value Philip Marshall's opinion, if that tells you anything, which is not at all. So I have called up two websites that are mock draft pages that I do trust their opinions on, and will be very curious to get feedback from y'all. Every year we say this. I said this last year with the crop of Bama kids coming out. As a Packers fan, you sit there and you go, well, you know, here are our needs, and here are the Bama kids coming out, and I'm still mad at the Packers for not taking Courtney Upshaw. They had a chance, let him slip. I think they regret it. So we have two separate mock drafts with Green Bay taking Bama players. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. We will talk about Bama hoops. And, Kerry, I know that you called in last Wednesday from the game. Bird said that we lost a heartbreaker to Dayton. And I said, I don't know that I would call that a heartbreaker because we were never really in the game. I mean, the score there at the end made it look close, but we never really had a shot at winning that game.
There was a nice rally in the last 3 or 4 minutes blip where they cut it down to where if Alabama could have hit maybe a three here or there, they might could have perhaps taken it to overtime. I wouldn't really call it a heartbreaker. The heartbreaking part about it was the poor defense that Bama played. In the first half, failing to guard the perimeter. And the second half, failing to guard the paint, giving up dunks and layups like they were, you know, candy at Christmas. It was the most poorly played defensive game I've seen from an Anthony Grant coached Alabama team. And I've seen most of the games they played, probably all the games they played, since he's been there. And they did cut it down to about 3 one time. And had a shot to maybe tie it or take the lead, but Dayton kept responding. I mean, it's one thing to get back in the game, but at some point you got to stop the other team, and when they had to stop them, they couldn't stop them. And Dayton may indeed sneak into the tournament, I don't know. But to be quite frank, after today's injury news with the announcement by the university that Carl Engstrom, the junior 7'1" center from Sweden, is done for the year, it's going to be more of a challenge now for Alabama to make the NCAA tournament. They still might be able to squeeze in, but right now, if you told me that Alabama could go 9-9 in the league in his first year of the 18-game schedule, I'd be thrilled beyond belief with 9 guys on scholarship, and one of those 9, well, you have 10, but Carl's out for the year. That drops you to 9, and then Andrew Steele is fighting a sports hernia quite similar to the one that football running back Kenneth Darby had a few years back. So those things are quirky, too. We don't know the availability of Andrew. We don't even know if he'll be ready for the SEC games, much less the VCU game this Saturday. So they're down to 9 scholarship guys, and 8 of those are healthy. And, yes, Coach Grant does have a couple of pretty talented walk-ons, mainly Dakota Slaughter, but there's some others. But you hate to have to call on those guys to win an SEC game, but that's where we are right now.
Kerry?
I've seen Coach get blasted all day for his roster management, but I guess we can talk about that later.
I'm going to tell you right now, I think there's an unsung basketball player sitting on a football team that we need to go get, like, right now.
Adrian Hubbard?
Nope. Jesse Williams.
Who?
I'm telling the kid can play ball. He's got quick feet. He loves basketball. He loves basketball as much as he loves football. He is a fine basketball player. And, you know, if nothing else, come in and just – you know, if you've got somebody that thinks they're going to own the lane and drive on you, stick Jesse out there for 3 minutes.
But, Bo, you know, would you endanger your NFL career to play a few games of basketball and maybe re-injure the knee you hurt against Georgia?
I don't know. If you're a kid, who cares? You know, go for it. That's a good question.
There's a rumor, Bird, and I don't really believe it because Saban frowns on this kind of thing, but there's a rumor that Adrian Hubbard might join the basketball team after the bowl game. It was out there before Carl got hurt. Now, this has never happened under Saban, and it really hasn't happened at Alabama since the 60s, okay?
Yeah.
There's been a couple other SEC schools like South Carolina and Auburn that have utilized football players at times. Alabama has not since the 60s. Okay, that's a long time. But there's talk that Adrian may give it a shot. I personally am not going to believe it until I see him out there, but that rumor is out there.
Well,
the guy
right,
that I think could help him is Michael Williams, but he's not going to endanger his pro career by doing it either.
Yeah, no, and Michael's got the body for it. I mean, can you imagine him in the lane? My gosh.
I've seen him in the lane, Bert. I scouted him in high school. I scouted him at a Pickens County basketball game one time. So he can do it. He's a legit 6'6", but Michael, and I asked Michael point blank, one-on-one, at the SEC Media Days if he'd consider it, and he said no. When I played my last game for Pickens County, that was the last organized game I'm going to play. I'll go to the rec and play a little bit, but I'm not going to play more organized ball. I hung up those sneakers, and I said, okay, Mike, I respect that. But I seriously have heard that Adrian Hubbard would like to give it a go. Whether that's going to actually happen, I don't know. But the fact that it's out there, I find quite interesting. Adrian was an excellent high school player at Norcross, Georgia.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, right now, it's one of those situations that if you can just get some athletes that are in shape, so to speak, it would help the team. But I don't have real high lofty expectations for this year. I think that they still have got some chemistry issues, and I still think that there are. This has a team that can be potentially a hot streak team, meaning they can jump up, get on a hot streak, you know, sink seven or eight threes in a row and just embarrass somebody, and then the next night just stink up the place. So it's a consistency issue. Part of it's personnel. Part of it, you know, is, you know, the chemistry that you've got to have on a basketball team. And then, you know, being able to rotate eight guys through and knowing who those eight guys are and what their roles are and how they play. You know, now I'm starting to miss Ben Eblin.
No, shut up.
Oh, I want to see who bit on that one.
Yeah, I'll bite all day long.
I made a version of a comment about Ben earlier, and I wasn't trying to be mean, but I made it on BamaMag.com. People have been blasting Coach Grant all day today for roster management, saying that he had no business coming into the season with 10 scholarship players. And it's people whose opinion I really respect. But here's the thing, guys. Coach Grant tried to sign some other guys in the 10 he had. Willie Cauley-Stein, who is starting at power forward for Kentucky, came very close to committing to Alabama.
Yeah.
And there were another one or two big men that he went after, and he just didn't get them. It wasn't for lack of effort. But these people are ticked that Grant didn't sign. And pardon I'm not cutting this kid down because I love him, okay? But they're ticked because Grant didn't sign the equivalent of a Ben Eblin power forward or a Ben Eblin center just to take up a scholarship and a place on the bench.
Nah.
My response to those people was twofold, okay? And y'all don't have to agree with me if you don't want to, but my response to those people that have been bashing Coach Grant all day today about roster management, he's got two or three walk-ons who would be in the playing rotation right now at Auburn or Mississippi State. In the playing rotation, legitimate lettermen that are walk-ons to Alabama. Remember the name Dakota Slaughter. He gave a taste of it a couple weeks ago of what he could do.
Yep.
He scored 10 off the bench. And remember the name Keon Blackledge, who can bury threes. Those two guys will be playing lettermen for State and Auburn both right now. Okay, that's number one. And number two, for all those whiners who thought he should have signed some stiff to sit the bench and never really contribute just to have a bigger roster, find yourself a good Obi-Gon.
Wow.
Because it obviously is hurting. Okay? Obviously it's hurting, so go get it treated, okay? That's all I got to say about that.
Now, you know what, Kerry, you're right. I mean, it's I am not second guessing anything Coach Grant is doing with this basketball club. I'll take another year of building and putting together the right kids and the right program. I'm not ready to set my hair on fire and go running around the stadium just yet.
Well, you know what? It's premature to rule them out of any kind of postseason play.
It is. Yeah.
We haven't even started conference play yet.
They're definitely an IT team, and they're going to be on the cusp of the NCAA even without Carl, because quite frankly, this is not the greatest year the SEC's ever had, guys. Even Kentucky's a little bit down, okay? So,
well,
the SEC is Florida and the 13 hopefuls, basically. Okay?
Yeah.
Kerry, those people that were unloading on Coach Grant about roster management, 6 months ago, these were the same people that were complaining about them signing Carl Engstrom, you know, the 7-foot white boy that can't play. And all of a sudden, Coach has coached up both of the 7-footers, Musa Gay and Carl Engstrom, have exhibited marked improvement from last season to this season. Both of those young men are playing better ball, and it's coaching, guys. Anthony Grant is a brilliant basketball mind, and those same people that were bashing him for taking on these projects at center, now all of a sudden Carl starts playing good ball. Well, we got to find something to bitch about. Well, Carl gets hurt, and it's a damn shame, because he really was starting to turn the corner. I think everybody on the show tonight would agree that if you get 7 points and 7 rebounds a night at Carl.
Yay.
We're in good shape.
Especially in the SEC, when you get into the wars in the SEC.
Let me call a name for you from the recent SEC past. It's all I ever wanted Carl to be. Stephen Hill from Arkansas.
Yeah.
Yes.
Gets blocks some shots, sets some picks, gets some rebounds, and occasionally contribute on offense. And Carl had gotten to that point before he got hurt. And that's because Dan Hipsher, our associate head coach, is an excellent big man coach, and Grant knew that when he hired him. And he's also worked with Musa and made him a better player. And as far as roster management goes, you don't sign stiffs just so you can say you have people on scholarship, A. And B, you have a top five center who's 6'10 and growing, and a top 10 power forward who's 6'8 and growing, coming in as true freshmen next year who are going to help the team. And I'm speaking of Jimmy Taylor and Shannon Hale. So there's you some roster management for all the Einsteins who were. And I mean, Blip, I don't know how much you read today. They have been on Grant mercilessly all day, all these roster management experts. And I swear I hope we make him some play tournament just so I can. I've got names. I know who they are. One of them is actually a friend of mine, but he's a young guy, so he likes to spout off a little bit. But let me tell you, if they make the NCAA tournament, oh, man, am I going to be passing up gallon jugs of shut-up juice, buddy. I'm ready.
CC is on the box tonight. I love it.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Well, no, it seems like, you know, this roster management problem, it's just weird to me. It's like a complete misunderstanding of how basketball recruiting works. You know, you have to be on kids so early, and you have to be on kids constantly, because there's a lot more structure with basketball through the AAU programs and through some of the, you know, high school tournaments that are just out of this world. I can tell you, being from Mobile, and I came up through high school, and the other part of my college was Otis Hughley at LaFleur going all over the country, bringing the DeMarcus Cousinses of the world to play these top prospects. Basketball recruiting is a totally different animal than football. You know, your board is 3 and 4 guys. You hope to get one or two, unless your name is John Calipari, of course. And it's just a tough thing. So I guess, you know, listening to your story, Kerry, I don't understand it. So that's just my take on that whole deal.
You just brought up a good point, though, Thomas. let me tell it. I know we've got to get to football, y'all, but let me throw one more basketball thing in here. You brought up Otis, and Otis coached a guy named Antonio Lang, and Antonio ended up going to Duke and never even considered either in-state schools. Antonio's got a son who's a junior at McGill-Tulane, and they're coming to play Hoover in a couple of weeks, and I'll be scouting that game. Now, another team that's coming to play Hoover in a couple of weeks that I'll be scouting is Winona. And Blip, they've got a junior point guard by the name of Justin Coleman, and they're playing at home tonight against Fairfield, and they've got 150 people in the lobby that can't get in the gym, and they've turned people away in the parking lot to see this game in Birmingham tonight. And one of the reasons is it's Justin Coleman's first game of the season. He's been head transferred from somewhere, and this was his first night to be eligible. At the game tonight, this is a high school game in Birmingham, where Winona's hosting Fairfield. You have coaches from Alabama, Auburn, Virginia, and a couple other schools, all to see this game tonight. And one reason is Justin Coleman. Another reason is Duranier Bear Wilson, who may end up playing football and basketball in college, but he's another story, 6'6", 220, built like Julio Jones. But the junior point guard is why Alabama is there. And his name is Justin Coleman. He's very interested in Alabama, and he's a 2014 kid, so throw those two things out. But I'm going to have an in-person scout of him when they come to Hoover next month and an in-person scout of Antonio Lane Jr. when McGill comes to play in a Christmas tournament at Hoover in a couple of weeks. So, but, yeah, I know we got to eventually get to football, and I'm ready for that.
Man, and that's a name Bama fans should familiarize themselves with now. Coleman can ball. Think Chris Paul at the point guard position. He's that level of talent. So let's do talk football. And just real quick, I'll do my Blip bounce around the Bama blog. Everybody, it seems, is talking about who's going and who's staying. BamaMag.com, top headline is McCarron will return for senior season. BamaHammer.com, top headline, Alabama football, Eddie Lacy and DJ Fluker's draft prospects. So everybody is forecasting where the juniors are going, and I want to bring up, I would talk about McShay. I think McShay and Kiper on ESPN are fine for entertainment value as far as the talking heads, but the two websites to me that get it right, I mean, and I will follow the NFL mocks all the way through April. I get into this stuff. But WalterFootball.com is one that I really enjoy, and it's free. You don't have to pay anything, and they actually will do their mocks all the way through, you know, through February, mid-March. They'll do the first three rounds mocked, but then come close to the actual draft itself in April, they'll mock the whole thing out all the way through like six, seven rounds. So Walter Football right now has the Chiefs winning the number one draft pick and choosing Geno Smith, the quarterback from West Virginia. Top Bama player that they have coming out is DeMarcus Milliner, and they've got DeMarcus going 9 to San Diego. The other website that I like is drafttech.com, and it's draft, spelled like you'd expect, T-E-K.com. And Draft Tech also has the Chiefs drafting first. They also have Geno Smith, the quarterback from West Virginia. But interesting, Draft Tech also gives you a alternate pick. If the Chiefs don't choose Geno Smith, they may go this direction. Draft Tech has D. Milliner as the alternate number one pick. So, and then later in their mock, they've got D being drafted 4th overall to the Phillies. So there are already people starting to talk about D. Milliner as a potential number one overall pick. And, guys, I got to tell you, I feel like if D goes out in the national championship game and really shines like he has all season, I mean, name a game that D got picked on.
I could name a game that he picked on people, but
he doesn't have any dents in the armor. I mean, his resume is sterling.
Yes.
If he goes out and really shows out against Notre Dame, I feel like he will be strong in the conversation to be in those top five picks. I mean, here we've got somebody already mocking him at 4. And then later in the draft tech mock, and here's the question mark. We know DJ Fluker's coming out. Most mocks have him second, either mid to late second or early third round. Eddie Lacy's draft stock went through the roof after the championship game in Georgia. His performance against Georgia probably moved Eddie up an entire round in the draft.
I don't know why, because they've got seven NFL defensive players on Georgia.
Well, C.J. Mosley is the big question mark, and I've read both sides of the argument. I've read both sides of the fence. Some feel like he's going to come back. Some feel like he's going to go. Draft Tech has C.J. going 14 overall to St. Louis. Walter Football has C.J. a little bit deeper. Interestingly enough, both mocks have St. Louis taking a Bama kid. Walter Football has St. Louis taking Chance Warmack. And I'm going to pull up the late second round, or late first round, excuse me. They've got C.J. And I'm going to read you this because I think it's an interesting analysis. Walter Football has C.J. going also in the first round, but 27th overall to the Ravens. And here's their rationale. It said, the Ravens wanted Dante Hightower, but the Patriots moved ahead of them to snag him. Ozzie Newsome will select another SEC linebacker as a successor for Ray Lewis. Lewis was thought to be out for the year with a torn triceps, and his career could be over. C.J. Mosley fits the mold. I don't know that Mosley is necessarily a good fit comparing him to Ray Lewis, but there is an interest from the Ravens. They've scouted him already. They've got Barrett Jones also going in the first round, and Barrett is an interesting prospect for the pros. I've seen him mocked anywhere from first round all the way as deep as third round. And that's one where I get excited for my team. You know, the Packers have a need there. They'll be drafting late first round. In this particular mock, they've got Barrett going 31st overall to the Falcons, which the Falcons obviously have quite a lot of Alabama talent. Seems to be a popular pro team amongst the Alabama fan base. I think it would be a terrific fit for Barrett.
Well, you know what? The Falcons have a center who's like 40. So that would make a lot of sense. But I'm exaggerating only a little bit. But Tom McClure got out of LSU a long time ago, and he's been with the Falcons. He's been their center almost as long as Jeff Van Note was back in the day. So that would make a lot of sense right there.
That rationale also applies to the Ravens. Their center's about 40. I think his last name's Burke. He's been there for forever and a day.
Walter Football has, just to round this out, Walter Football has DJ Fluker going in the second round, 44th overall. So that's early second round to the New York Jets.
Oh, God, no.
Both Walter Football and Draft Tech have the same team choosing Jesse Williams. Both of those drafts feel like Jesse is a perfect fit for the Seattle Seahawks. So both of them have Jesse going second round. And then this is what gets me excited. James Starks has yet to prove that he can stay healthy. Alex Green has shown nothing. Cedric Benson is obviously not a long-term answer. So the Packers in the second round will take Eddie Lacy, running back, Alabama.
Wow.
Makes all the sense in the world. I've been screaming all season long as I watch the NFL. Every time I watch a Saints game, it makes my butt hurt because Mark Ingram is the most woefully underutilized tool in any offense in the NFL. And I would love nothing more than for the Saints to trade Ingram to a team that will actually use him.
Well, they have no front. They have no coach, and you know they're kind of a rudderless team right now. So it's very possible that that could happen, but it will be down the road, and it depends on what the Saints need. I mean, they're deluxely staffed at running back. You're correct, but I mean, it seems like every time Mark gets a chance and gets an opportunity to touch the ball, he does something good with it.
Let's talk recruiting for just a minute. Let's move from who's leaving for the NFL to who's going to be coming from the high school ranks to join our NFL preparatory school. And an interesting story, I want to talk about the offensive tackle position. Obviously, losing who we are losing and the number of kids that we have on the offensive line leaving. The offensive line was a priority. It was an emphasis for the staff. And recently had a visit. Carrie, I'm hoping that you can help me on pronunciation. Is it David Neville or David Knievel? Do you pronounce the K like Evil Knievel?
I think it's Neville.
I know you're Neville. Talking about it. I don't think he's going to end up at Bama, so I'm not going to worry about pronouncing his name.
I don't either, but here's the story. Big kid, 6'6", 295. I think he's from Canada, if I recall correctly. He's from up north. Came all the way down to Alabama. We got involved late. There was a lot of talk on the message boards about his visit, and it seemed like we might be getting serious. And a lot of people had speculated. They said, well, if Bama is extending this kid a committable offer, does that mean we don't feel very good about Laramie Tunsil? David Neville has set an announcement next Tuesday. He was in Nebraska. Interesting from Tim that he has a committable offer. He says, I think this is one of those tough decisions the staff had to make. He feels like the staff made that decision, did not extend him a fully offer, which is going to push him elsewhere to either Nebraska or West Virginia. And I think that tells you a whole lot about where we feel Laramie Tunsil is going to end up.
Which would be a hooray.
As of about an hour ago, Nick Saban, Jeremy Pruitt, and Jeff Stoutland were all in Laramie Tunsil's home meeting with him live and in person.
Yay!
Yay!
I would love to hear of a sales pitch that was given, but if they didn't think they had a great shot at him, all three of them wouldn't have traveled down there tonight. That's number one. Number two, maybe you guys can help me because I'm at a loss to explain what the hell is going on with Brandon Hill. He commits to Alabama. He commits to Ole Miss. He sneaks into Tuscaloosa under the radar on a visit this past weekend, which reportedly went great, and he still has his Alabama offer, and Alabama's probably back ahead for Brandon Hill. Then you have Leon Brown coming in January, Blip, and you have Austin Shepherd, who I think is a very underrated backup to DJ Fluker. And then on the other side, you have Brandon Green, who is an excellent person being groomed to succeed Cyrus unless we get Tunsil. So there's a embarrassment of riches right now at tackle. Good problem to have because I remember the days when we couldn't find one, much less four or five. recruiting for offensive tackle is quite intriguing right now.
It really is. Now, here's I think that your opinion, Carrie, and mine of Lucky from Bama Online is about the same. I mean, when Lucky tells you something, it's usually – he's a straight shooter. He's not going to sugarcoat it. His take on Hill is that he is not necessarily the most mature 18-year-old. It seems like whoever was in the room last is going to be his favorite. So Ole Miss gets in his ear a little bit. Hugh Freeze made a very strong impression. I think the Ole Miss staff got to Mama a little bit and had convinced him that Ole Miss was the place to be. Now all of a sudden the Bama staff is back in his ear, and now it seems like he is favoring Alabama. And I think it's one of these deals that whoever has the last big shot at sitting down with the young man is probably going to be where he signs. He just seems very emotional.
Well, and Mom's kind of in favor of Ole Miss, and supposedly Brandon Hill is fighting some weight issues, and he went to a particular prep school that wasn't very kind to Alabama when it came to Bobby Massey a couple years ago, who's now in the NFL, and this had all the earmarkings of another Bobby Massey situation. But I don't know how the Brandon Hill situation is going to add up. But Brandon Hill's a wonderful player. He's got a great story, not unlike Michael Orr's story, really, from Blindside. A very similar situation for young Mr. Hill growing up in the Memphis area. But I don't know what he's going to do. It could be Ole Miss. It could be Bama. I do not know. Laramie Tunsil, on the other hand, is kind of a in-shape, non-weight issue version of Andre Smith. And if you get him, then the competition at left tackle is going to be fierce. Because Cyrus is probably going 1 year from now. I don't think we'll have Cyrus but one more year, guys.
Yeah, and, I agree.
And, I agree, too. You know, he'll make
Brandon
a lot
Green,
of money.
Yeah, and Brandon Green is being groomed at left tackle right now. No question about it. He redshirted this year for a reason. But Laramie Tunsil is also a left tackle. Brandon Hill is probably a right tackle. But you got Leon Brown coming in January, who had a great year in junior college. And you got Austin Shepherd, who I really think is underrated. You know, I feel like offensive tackle is in good hands whether or not we get Brandon Hill. I'd like to get him because he's a good player, but at the same time, I'd much rather have Tunsil if I got a pick.
Do you feel like at the end of the day, Tunsil signs with the Tide?
My gut is yes, but it's more like a 52-48 Bama over Georgia yes right now. It's not. Maybe tonight's in home with Saban and Pruitt and Stallion will make it a higher percent. Georgia's really in his ear. He's got a great relationship with Will Friend, who's the former Alabama offensive lineman, is now the O-line coach at Georgia. He's got a great relationship, Laramie does, with Will. And Georgia's making a run on him really harder and better than I thought they would. I got to give them some props. I thought we would have had a big lead by now, but I don't even know if we have a lead right now. It could be 50-50 with him. Now, tonight, the in-home visit, you know, it could go miles with Laramie. The thing I like about Laramie is the other kids in his area, like Walker and Hill, running back Hill.
Henry.
Derrick Henry.
Yeah, Henry, I mean. Well, I called him Hill. Henry and Walker are helping a lot with Tunsil. And I'm sure there's people on Georgia from Jacksonville. Theus is from Jacksonville, but I don't know how much he knows this kid. Tunsil. I don't know that he even knows him at all other than from his visits up there. But we got some kids his own age in his ear. So my gut feeling is Alabama, but it's not as strong as it was a week or two ago. Georgia's really making a run on this more than I thought they would. I thought we'd have had him locked up by now. And I think this one with Laramie is going to go to signing day.
Well, the question, I believe you can clarify, Kerry. When Laramie Tunsil does his official visit, his host will be Derrick Henry, from what I've read. So just to kind of fill in to your previous point, that's got to help Alabama in my mind.
Yeah, and I think Marcus Walker will be there the same weekend. So, I feel good about it, but, I mean, I'm feeling 52-48 good, whereas a week or two ago I was feeling like 75-25 good. So, Georgia, to their credit, has really made a run on him, and I don't think it's over yet either way. But, you know, we're going to have a good player at left tackle when Cyrus leaves. I don't know if it'll be Brandon Green or if it'll be Laramie Tunsil, but either way we're going to have a good player there. And, you know, who knows what can happen on the other side or at guard. So the thing about offensive line is not so much position as it is getting the best five players out there. And I've spent a good bit of the day today trying to figure out who the best five players are going to be next year. And you know, because AJ is coming back to an offensive line that's losing three guys. My theory is that the offensive line left to right next year is going to be Cyrus, Ari, Ryan Kelly, Steen, and Leon Brown. But that's just a theory that I'm working on right now. But either way, there's going to be five pretty good guys out there. And thank God Leon Brown's going to be there in the spring. Whether he or Austin Shepherd comes out ahead in that competition, I don't know. But I'm pretty sure they didn't sign Leon to come in and be a second-teamer. So he's going to be given the opportunity. We know that Cyrus is going to be the left tackle. We know that Steen's the right guard. And we're 99% sure that Kelly's the center. And shout out to Ryan Kelly, who only played in 8 games this year, but because of a lack of freshman centers, was named All-SEC Freshman Center this year. So that's pretty good. But they're really high on Ryan Kelly. He's considered to be a younger version of Barrett Jones. So I'm optimistic about next year's offensive line. And, you know, with his decision today, obviously AJ is too.
Well, let's talk about quarterback. We've got 2 committed for this class with Cooper and Parker McLeod. Interesting that yesterday Luke Del Rio, Coach Jack Del Rio's son, decommits from Oklahoma State. And I saw a picture of young Mr. Luke in the Alabama locker room with a number 12 jersey on during his visit from today. So it looks like we are entertaining, at least on the surface, it looks like we're entertaining the idea of Luke Del Rio possibly playing for the Tide. Do you feel like we could take a third quarterback in this class, or is that crazy talk?
Who are you asking?
You, anybody.
You asking me or Bird? I have an opinion on it, but I'll wait if others want. I've been talking a little bit too much here.
Well, I don't think they need any other quarterbacks. I'm going to tell you right now, but it's as we've seen from this year, you know, one nick on AJ, and it could have been a whole different year for us. So you can't have too much talent sitting back there. And I still get into arguments over my young friend from Texas. I think he's going to be a stellar quarterback for Alabama. I think Alec Morris is truly the real deal, and I get up and down with people over the fact that he came from just a tough, tough league down here in Texas. 6A ball is like college ball. The kid is a winner, and I think he's got such a great – he's a horse that can run. I mean, he's got a whole lot of attributes that the previous two quarterbacks at Alabama did not have. And he's got a better arm. He's got a better arm than AJ and G-Mac put together.
Well, just to jump in real quick, Alabama has entertained also a JUCO quarterback. I mean, they've put out some feelers. So will Alabama take a third quarterback in this class? I don't know, but there are enough quarterbacks looking at Alabama this year that would lead you to believe that if the fit is right, there could be 3 quarterbacks coming in on this in this class. Excuse me.
I guess, well, that bounces the ball to you, Kerry.
Yeah. Well, okay. Let me give you the CC Bama insight on this. First of all, I do not think there is a good business reason to take 3 quarterbacks in this class.
No.
That's number one.
Nope.
Number two, if just what is committed and returning now stands, there will be 6 scholarship quarterbacks next year.
Yep.
That's ridiculous. You don't need 6, okay? So I got a couple of theories, and they may not come to fruition, but in the past, when I've thrown these things out, I've added about 750 on them, so I'm going to throw them out.
Ely transfer.
Not 1,000, but... I think the JUCO transfer that we talked to was in case AJ didn't come back.
Okay.
Okay. They weren't going to sign a guy and only him start 1 year. Okay?
Right.
That's number one. Number two, you know, all this talk about Luke Del Rio, it's interesting. But, you know, if Luke Del Rio shows up at Alabama, it doesn't necessarily mean he's one of the 85 guys on scholarship. I'm pretty sure Jack can afford to pay his son's way if he wants his son to play for Nick Saban bad enough. Okay? Just a theory. Nobody will ever know if it happens. But we had a player that lettered 4 years and played a lot his senior year, and everybody thought he was on scholarship the whole time, and it turns out he paid his own way the whole 4 years. This is a very recent player. I don't want to call his name on the radio, but you'd be surprised to know that just everybody you think is one of the 85 is not always one of the 85, okay? Okay, that's number two. Number three, I don't support this, and I don't hope it happens, but there are rumblings that Blake Sims could transfer. It may happen. It may not.
Yeah.
It may be that Blake stays and goes to another position. I don't know. But – and Blake has gotten a good amount of playing time this year for a backup, but Blake wants to be a starter, and I don't blame him. I mean, like if Blake went somewhere like Georgia Tech or Georgia Southern, he'd be a freak.
The chat room says that Blake will transfer. Viking Horse from the chat room says that he thinks Blake is gone.
Well, it's out there. You won't know anything about it.
He thinks Ely is gone, too, and I've heard that, too. This is the first I've heard anything about Blake, but I've heard that Ely is probably going to transfer. There's no two ways about it. I mean, Alec Morris is going to – if there is a backup next year, as far as not in a Wildcat situation, it's going to be Alec Morris, period, end of story.
Well, that's possible, Bird, but we don't know what kind of spring yet Cooper Bateman's going to have.
Doesn't matter.
He could be there in the spring, and that makes him a factor.
If he was coming
in August, I'd be 100% behind. But, you know, Alec's been running the scout team all fall. He has taken very little reps in our offense. Yeah, he's in the meetings and all that with the quarterbacks, and that's all fine and good. But Alec has done very little running of our offense. So the fact that Cooper Bateman's coming in the spring, him and Alec are going to have a heck of a competition for the backup. And one other theory I'll throw out there regarding the number of quarterbacks in this class is, I have not heard that about Ely Bird, but I do believe it because he's not ever going to play at Alabama.
No.
Okay? He's just not. He can tell his grandkids he threw a touchdown pass at Alabama.
Yeah.
He did, but as far as ever being a starter, don't see it. But also,
there'll never be a Daniel Moore painting of Philip Ely.
No, unless he's a holder. but listen to this, though. Serious business. Don't be shocked whether or not, you know, and I'm going to reiterate, if somebody like Del Rio shows up, that don't mean daddy's not paying the way, okay? And then the last thing, don't rule out the possibility, even I'm going to say probability, of Parker McCloud gray shirt.
Really?
So, it's not out of the realm. You know, if all those transfers happen, they may let him come on in. But I think that I'm safe to say that he's been talked to about the possibility.
Yeah.
Of gray shirt. And if you want to still come here, and Saban loves gray shirt for kids like Parker who just want to be there because they love Alabama. And Parker's not a bad quarterback. I've been seeing a lot of people trashing him on the internet. But he's not a bad quarterback. There's people on scholarship in the SEC that Parker McCloud is a better quarterback than them, and I'll just leave it at that. I'm not going to name schools or anything, but there are people on scholarship in the SEC right now that Parker McCloud is better than. So if you can get a guy like that as a gray shirt, then you do it. Then you've already got your quarterback for your 14 class already in there. So don't rule that possibility out. I do not see the University of Alabama going to camp next August with 6 scholarship quarterbacks. Don't see it. And
good conversation.
My story on the quarterback situation.
Hey, I'm loving it. Does Parker's potential gray shirt have anything to do with the fact that there may be more elite talent at play at this stage in the recruiting cycle than we had anticipated as a result of some of the coaching volatility?
I can speak. Sorry, Kerry. I can speak to that. Maybe, yes. A lot more gray shirts have been starting to rumble out. You know, information's been leaking to me. Some of the, I guess, what you could call peripheral guys might be offered a gray shirt. You know, we'll accept your commitment, but we might need to have you make you gray shirt. That conversation has been had with some people. Which elite talent it is, I'm not 100% sure, but once again, it's been out there from multiple people. Multiple people have come to me and said that. Kerry, if you have something different, feel free to shout me down.
No, you're good, Thomas. Think of it like this. Many, many, many times in the last 6-7 years, Alabama has committed kids very early in the process, and for whatever reason, that kid gets hurt or what. Okay, just to throw a name out there. Not out of the question that Bradley Bozeman would gray shirt. Yeah,
because of the knee.
Jogging bar, that's all fine and good, but he had a knee injury and it was a serious one, and that would be one of my theories on what you just said, Thomas, and it makes a lot of sense.
Gentlemen, I'm going to tell you what. We've had a couple of requests from the chat room for us to hum for a couple of minutes while they can go take a bathroom. Apparently, they're really digging the conversation tonight. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to stick us on a break real quick, and so I can do same, because this is a great conversation. You'll be right back with the QB controversy raging here on BAMS Radio tonight. You're listening to BAMS Radio.
BAMS Radio. We're not your average sports talk show. All Bama, all the time. Bringing the lumber for Alabama sports.
Oh, welcome back to BAMS Radio. I hope you all enjoyed that quick little respite as much as I did. Everybody's telling you to mute my mic, Bird. I guess they could hear Mrs. Bird in the background. Is that correct, Blip?
Something like that.
Okay. Anyway, we're back. And, you know, it looks like we've got an embarrassing amount of riches in the larder for coming up next year for the football team. Now, here's the question I've got for you guys. The young man with an Auburn tattooed to his forearm that's playing in the Alabama-Mississippi All-Star game.
Mm-hmm. I have some strong opinions on this.
Okay, let's separate what we know and some fact from emotion and opinion, and then let's mix them all together and dump them out, because this ought to be absolutely juicy. Blip, you got it. Take it.
I know a lot of people follow the young man on Twitter. Okay,
and who are we talking about?
Reuben Foster.
Reuben Foster.
Number one player in the state of Alabama, number two player overall in the country. I do have a hard time separating some of the emotion of the way he transitioned from Alabama to Auburn. I mean, the press release that Trooper had him read, that was word for word a copy of T.J. Yeldon's "I'm flipping my commitment" speech from the year prior, I thought was tacky. And since then, we have viewed things through the crimson glasses, and we've heard nothing but reports of problems with his weight, problems with the work ethic, attitude. And if you follow the kid on Twitter, he's a troll. I think he's out there trying to stir up fan bases just for the sake of stirring shit up. And so I'm to the point now where, yes, I understand he's an elite talent, but you know what? Let's take that scholarship and give it to Jonathan Cook or one of the kids who really, down in their gut, wants to be at Alabama. I'll take heart over God-given talent all day long, and especially when a kid like Cook is as talented as he is, maybe doesn't have the extra 2 inches that Saban wants in a prototypical corner, but damn it, the kid can ball. I'm to the point that I really don't want Reuben Foster. I know Kirby Smart met with him. Went down to Auburn High School, met with the young man, talked about, you know, can we get back in? And then Reuben comes out and says, hey, I'm going wherever Troopy lands. Wherever Trooper Taylor goes, I'm going.
He's a party guy.
Really, dude? Come on.
That's his father figure, dude. You hit the nail on the head. And you know what? I did that on purpose just to kind of stir the pot and let you guys kind of vent a little bit. But number one, I'm going to put it in two ways. And this is, again, one of those flip of the coins thing. But you look at a Jadeveon Clowney, who on this program tonight would not have loved to have gotten a Jadeveon Clowney and had him today on the Alabama Crimson Tide team?
Jadeveon Clowney comes to Alabama, Johnny Football doesn't win the Heisman, period, end of story.
See, that's and all I've heard for 2 years since he's gone to South Carolina is how we don't have a bona fide pass rusher. But Jadeveon Clowney is such a talent on the field that he takes up three spots. Is it possible that Reuben Foster is that kind of talent? I don't know. If he ranks that high, guys, no matter what kind of crimson glasses we have on, does it happen 2 years down the road? We go, holy cow, we really had an opportunity to get this guy, but we kind of got our butts up tight because of the AU on his arm. And you know what? I'm with you, Blip. I'm not calling you out and calling you down, but there's something in the back of my head that says, golly, if only we had gotten Jadeveon Clowney, maybe we could be better than number one, you know, and play for more than, you know, three BCS championships.
Well, let me jump in on the Reuben Foster conversation real quick. I have to consistently remind myself that these are 18-year-old guys, and I do see Reuben Foster as kind of trolling on Twitter, but at the same time, I looked at Geno Smith last year, who did kind of mess with fan bases, you know, the current Alabama corner. He, if you pull yourself back, he did kind of troll a lot too.
Not like, really. I followed fan. Him. He did not really troll. Once he made his mind up, man, he was actually recruiting for Alabama big time in the background.
If I was an opposing fan base, I could make the argument that he was kind of trolling. I think it's the same thing as Reuben Foster? No. I do not think it's the same thing as Reuben Foster. But at the same time, all that being said, if Kirby Smart, Nick Saban, and the crew decide that Reuben Foster is worth it and he's willing to come in, basically shut up, a.k.a. shut down his blasted Twitter account, come on down. You know what you're getting yourself into. And if you don't like it, well, darn, Alabama missed on a recruit.
Yeah.
Luckily, we have four first-rounders this year.
Has there ever been a young man that needs Nick Saban as much as Reuben Foster?
Oh, absolutely.
Isaiah Crowell.
Yep. I know one.
Crowell. Yes. Geniuses. Great minds think alike.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because there's a kid that, who knows, if he'd been into the right system and instead of the party barn over at Georgia or the absolute anarchy down at Auburn, that and not only would he have had a decent football career, guys, but these are kids that would have gotten their lives straightened out, that would have gone on to become productive human beings in society long after they had played, you know, worn the crimson. So in some ways, Blip, I am so with you on this one. It's like, God, you know, spit in my eye, get your tattoo, and then, but, you know, there's a little bit of the Christian turnaround on that where you say, yeah, so what? He's a kid, you know, forgive, forget, move on. Get your head right, you know, play. And like you said, you know, you play for Nick and your life will turn around. You are going to be a different person after you come out of the program at Alabama. And I don't care if you're a walk-on and never see a playing down or you're one of the superstars on the team. They're all treated the same. And I think that the program that he's got in place down there doesn't just produce superlative football teams and championship caliber programs, but it produces human beings that go on their lives and become successful no matter where you put them. Okay, off soapbox. So anyway, but it's interesting because I'm with Blip. I'm like torn. It's like, you know, I want to kick the kid's ass right down the street. It's like, you know, go wherever you want to go, but don't come here. But on the other hand, I look at Jadeveon and I look at this kid going, you know, he needs us maybe more than we need him. He really needs us. And it's not until he understands that I think he truly will get his head right and move it in the right direction. And he may never. He may come from the kind of background that does not allow him to jump out of that kind of gang thug mentality into a higher echelon of learning. So, okay.
All right. One last prospect before we move into Legends Island. 2 weeks ago, I think that we had discussed Von Bell, and the feeling was that we were strong in contention, had made a pretty good case for ourselves. But the other schools were still very much in his ear, and that it wasn't a done deal. Where 2 weeks ago, I think, Kerry, you felt pretty good about Laramie Tunsil and maybe not as good about Von Bell, my stance has flip-flopped on those. I'm with you on Tunsil. I feel like Von Bell is almost a done deal, and I think a part of it has to do with the fact that the coaching staff has talked him into the fact that, you know, you may not get an opportunity to play safety, but we're going to give you a shot to play corner here at Alabama. And Von went, yeah, okay, I can play corner. What do you think about that?
I think Alabama's got a good lead for him right now, Blip. It's really the upheaval of Tennessee. He's a lifelong Tennessee fan, but when they had a coaching change, he doesn't know Butch Jones, you know, any more than I know Theodore Roosevelt. He doesn't know him. So it really helped Dooley getting fired. And I wish we had a little bit more time, because I've heard some intriguing things about Alabama coaching staff possible changes, including Derek Dooley. But
heck, we can go to a quick break, and I'll let you come back and talk about it. Let's do that. Because before Legend's not on yet, and so
I want to know. I want you guys to share.
This is good stuff. So here, welcome to some White Zombie.
Planet to give you in-depth insights of Bama football. AG, Blip, and the Bird bring the lumber.
I am the big dog man. I fill the woods around with a skeleton hand.
Blip, AG, and the Bird take on the world with BAMS Radio, broadcasting globally about Alabama football. Roll Tide, roll.
Mr. Cobb?
Yes, sir.
You're aware of the name of the ship, aren't you, Mr. Cobb?
Very aware, sir.
It bears a proud name, doesn't it, Mr. Cobb?
Very proud, sir.
It represents fine people.
Very fine people, sir.
We live in a fine, outstanding state.
Outstanding.
In the greatest country in the entire world.
In the entire world, sir.
And what is that name, Mr. Cobb?
Alabama, sir.
And what do we say?
Go, Bama! Roll Tide!
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go.
Yeah, if you are not up and dancing and saying Roll Tide, there's something wrong with you. Anyway, looks like we got Legend coming on. Before Legend, I fire you up live. I want to let Kerry, we've got a scintillating conversation going on tonight. Legend, we're going to hop it over to you in just a moment. Also, we've got a caller, Payne. I know you're on with us. Hang with us right there. Kerry, you are at bat. Dig in deep with those cleats, brother, and take a big swing for the fences.
Okay, I'm hearing some possible movement in the Alabama coaching staff after the bowl game. Nothing official yet, won't be till it comes from the U of A. But my understanding is that a member of Bobby Williams' family, perhaps a mom, has taken ill and that Bobby would like to be reassigned to the front office. This, again, is not official, but it's a very strong rumor. If that happens, look for a couple of different scenarios to occur. Derek Dooley could be brought in. In one of two roles, he could be the special team tight end coach, which Bobby's doing now, or Derek could be another member of the off-field staff, as those guys are constantly getting jobs at other schools coaching on the field. So don't be surprised if Derek Dooley comes to Alabama in one of those two roles.
Wow.
But wait, there's another one, though, Burr. I'm not done yet, son.
Okay. Merry Christmas,
there,
dude.
Is also a possibility. If Bobby goes to the front office, and by front office I mean one of the off-field administrative jobs that does certain roles for Coach Saban. If Bobby does move to that move, the other possibility is, and don't laugh, is that now unemployed Auburn special teams coach Jay Boulware may get a call to come and be the tight end special teams coach.
So you I like that.
They bowl where what's that, Thomas?
I like that as a potential hire. Auburn special teams are actually a bright spot for them the past couple of years.
Well, the way they've scored against
us. Jay's a pretty good recruiter, too. But so is Derek. And it wouldn't surprise me if one or both of those two individuals are wearing the Crimson Polo by the end of January. If it happens, you heard it here on Bama's Radio.
Wow. Well, if people are not listening tonight, then they need to listen on the podcast later, because this has been literally a velvet crown royal bag chock full of jewels. You guys got anything else before we bring the legend on? And we got Payne and we got callers calling in.
I want to ask Kerry one question before we go to Legend Island.
You got it.
One current commitment that we've talked about, you know, the three-headed monster of the three top flight running backs that we've got coming in. Everybody's worried about, are we going to lose Tyron Jones? Are we going to lose Derrick Henry? Are we going to lose Alt Tenpenny? And Tenpenny being the one that I think most folks would say is going to listen to the new head coach at Arkansas, being an Arkansas kid. Announced today, Arkansas has hired Jim Chaney, the quarterback coach from Tennessee, to be the offensive coordinator at Arkansas. Is Jim Chaney a strong enough hire at Arkansas to pull Alt Tenpenny?
No.
I don't think so. I think he's firmed Alabama, and I think Eddie Lacy going pro only helps the situation.
Yep.
And I'll have one more thing before I drop off. Alabama has made a significant move to the forefront, and I actually think Alabama is now going to get Robert Foster from Pennsylvania at wide receiver.
Wow. Awesome news. Well,
I really think they're going to get it.
We'll put that one in the bank when we say, hey, Kerry, CC Bama, awesome segment tonight, man. Thanks for hanging in. We are now going to transition to Legend Island and bringing up the Ayatollah of college footballola. That's not a word, but what the hell. You listen to BAMS Radio.
Blip, AG, and the Bird take on the world with BAMS Radio, broadcasting globally about Alabama football. Roll Tide, roll. Now, Legends Island on BAMS Radio.
Welcome, America. It's that time of the week here on Legend Island as we draw closer to the big national championship game between Alabama and Notre Dame. Honored tonight to be hanging out with Blip, Thomas Watt, and, of course, my man, Bama Bird, sounding good tonight. Big news tonight, guys, across the board. I wouldn't mind seeing Derek Dooley walk beside Nick Saban on the sideline at Alabama. How are you guys doing tonight?
Awesome, Legend. How you doing?
Doing well, brother. Thank you. Thank you. And thanks a million. Man, I'm just happy tonight to be a part of the Alabama family. And Kerry dropping some big news tonight along with some coaching changes coming down the line. Players headed pro. We don't rebuild at Alabama. We just reload, baby. You know what time it is. Eddie Lacy leave, we just put a Tenpenny, a Yeldon, you know, a Drake. They just line up, man. We got them six deep at Alabama. It's a wonderful thing tonight. How you doing, Bird?
Bird's great. I'm sitting down here at hospital down at MD Anderson, ready to lock and load. But I'll tell you what, we've got callers that have been waiting for, I guess, you. I know that Bring the Pain is just dying to get on. So, do you want to go ahead and take a couple of callers, or you want to have any trivial banter before we actually line up the callers on the crazy island?
Yeah, we can go ahead and talk to the callers. We appreciate our callers, and I got some questions for you guys tonight. I know y'all have had an exciting year when it's come to Alabama football. I'd like to hear y'all's thoughts on your best thoughts of the season and different kind of things. But, yeah, let's get to the callers tonight on the island. Appreciate everybody calling in. Appreciate all our advertisers tonight. Want to give a shout-out to Ace Tree and Landscaping, my boy Brad, right here in Birmingham, Alabama. sponsoring the show tonight. Just appreciate all our advertisers and callers. But bring the pain on. Let's hear what he's got to say tonight. I know the pain's got something good to say tonight.
Pain, you on, baby?
What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing tonight? A big Roll Tide to you.
Roll Tide back.
Roll Tide, brother. Roll Tide.
Legend, man, it's hot on your island. Where's my drink at, dog?
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. Bama Vodka. We got Bama Vodka. The pink packet store done delivered the goods tonight. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Mountain Dew. The island's fresh tonight. I'm eating a fresh pineapple tonight, bro. I done went all fruity. I done got like Gene Chizik. I done went fruity up in here.
I called in. I only talked to Bud in of that Reuben Foster deal, but I don't. I'm just going to blow that out of the water. As far as Derrick Henry, he's a hard commit to Alabama. He ain't going nowhere. He's totally committed to Alabama. As far as his Notre Dame and Alabama championship game, after that loss to Texas A&M, and we can't strike him back, and the cards fell the way it did this year, like it did last year, these seniors ain't going to let that game slip away. They're going to bear down, and they're going to knock heads. Mantateo ain't going to do nothing because they're going to double-team his Hawaiian butt. So we ain't got nothing to worry about.
You reckon at the first of the game, if Mantateo comes out and does some of his Polynesian hooky-jukey, and then all of a sudden you just put Jesse Williams right in his face, who is truly, you know, a Maorian warrior, and let him, you know, teach our boys some of that Maorian war chant. You know, this could be a shout out at the first of the game of, you know, instead of hillbillies and fish eaters, this could be against the two different islands in the damn South Pacific going after each other.
Yeah, I know. I'm saying, what, put Jesse Williams on Mantateo, Jesse would eat him alive.
Well, we'll see. I, you know what bothers me about this game, and this is something Blip said earlier in the night. Blip, you still out there? I'm assuming Blip.
Yep. Blip, I had to unclick my microphone there. Yeah, I'm here.
Well, you know, you made a comment to me, and it really, 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 really struck home. And it's something that none of the talking heads, of course, we haven't gotten into the crescendo yet, legend of all the different media around the country just completely hyping this thing out of its mind. But Blip made the comment that, I'll take a kid with heart over a kid with athletic ability any time. And does Notre Dame have more heart than Alabama? Because they're hungrier, they haven't had a national championship in a long time. Does this mean more to the Notre Dame kids than it means to the Alabama kids?
I don't think so. I think at Alabama, it's all about the championship. From the time you step on the field to the time you walk off the field, if you don't win a championship, it's all more or less a failure. I see what Blip is saying, though. Notre Dame is a historical program who also has a long history of championships. I still remember and sting from that 24-23 loss to Notre Dame in the national championship game when I was just a kid. If you remember, we had them backed up against the goal line, and they threw like a 40-yard pass out of the end zone to lock that game up. But I still think at the end of the day, there's truth to what Blip says, but I also think there's truth to the fact that when you have four first-round draft picks on your offensive line, you have a possible high second-round pick, late first-round pick in Eddie Lacy, a future first-round pick in T.J. Yeldon. I mean, talent does win out at the end of the day if it also has heart. And I believe Alabama has the heart. This is all about championships at Alabama. This is what we do. We wear the rings. We raise the banners. This is what we do. We are becoming the Boston Celtics, the New York Yankees of college football. You know, this is what we do. And I just don't think Notre Dame is anywhere close to the level of excellence that Alabama is when it comes to winning championships at this point in time. I think Notre
point
Dame
in time,
is
but I think if you look back in time and you look at the sterling career that they've had, it's equitable to Alabama. There are two teams in the country. That's why this matchup is such a dream matchup to the national media, because really outside of Notre Dame and Alabama, there are not another two schools. And Texas, forgive me, USC, forgive me, Michigan, forgive me. Y'all are proud programs, great programs. But when you get right down to it and you start looking at championships and you start looking at, you know, the storied programs, these two teams are it. They really are. You've got Notre Dame, with its massive, you know, I don't know what they call them, Team Green, you know, the fighting fish eaters. I don't know. I mean, they're all over the place. But, you know, and this really is, and that's where it's kind of a vacillation. I was almost baiting you guys, because at the end of the day, I think Alabama and its kids have every bit as much heart as Notre Dame does, and if anything, are better athletes and are used to being in the spotlight. And Notre Dame has yet to play a team like this Alabama team.
Well, let me jump in real quick, if that's all right. Could Notre Dame have more heart? That's an intangible that I just don't really want to measure. I can tell you that there are enough upperclassmen that have been there and done that at Alabama that the leadership core, if there's a kid that kind of slacks off, the leadership core will jump all over him during bowl prep, and that will not be a problem. Alabama is coming to play in Miami. I can tell you that the only team that has done anything close to the level of physicality to Notre Dame is Stanford. And depending on whether you believe the luck of the Irish or not, Stanford probably should have beaten Notre Dame.
Yeah,
it was literally a game of inches that stopped them on fourth down. Was it a fabulous play series by the Notre Dame defense to stop Stanford? Absolutely, and you have to give the Notre Dame defense respect for that. But looking at the type of games where a team has gotten physical with Notre Dame has fared average to poor. I mean, Pittsburgh ran all over Notre Dame. Obviously, Notre Dame had injuries in that game, which did negatively impact their defense, but Pittsburgh got physical on Notre Dame, and if Pittsburgh had a kicker that was not a choke artist, Notre Dame is not undefeated.
Wow.
Well, I think that's a great point.
BYU.
Go ahead, Payne. Go ahead. Go ahead,
Payne. You know, BYU almost beat them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And here's the thing. I think Notre Dame is a testimony to the mediocre of college football. I just don't think there's a high level of excellence across the board. And let me go biblical on you for a second. The heart, according to the Bible, is the mind. And if anybody has a mind of a champion, it's a Nick Saban coach team. Don't make me preach up in the church of college football. What we say heart, the heart is the mind. It's the mind. We have the mind of a champion. The Yankees have the mind of a champion. The Celtics have the mind of the champion. This is what we do. A champion wins. Somehow, some way, he finds a way to win. That's what a champion does. And I don't think Notre Dame is a championship caliber program, even though they've had a tremendous season, and Brian Kelly has done a tremendous job. At the end of the day in the SEC, this is an 8-4 team, maybe even 7-5, but they had to face the rigors of the SEC and go down the line like Alabama has with A&M, LSU, these kind of teams, Georgia. Notre Dame would not be here. This is a fluke, in my opinion.
Well,
I'd like to get y'all's opinion on Derrick Henry. Payne brought him up. Is this a guy that steps in like T.J. Yeldon?
Absolutely.
I'm not sure he'd play tailback. I think he'll get some reps at tailback. I could also see him, depending on how quickly he picks things up, as a Jolson Fowler type H-back at times. I know, oh, he's always played tailback, blah, 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 but that's a big body if you can teach him how to hit a hole and block, but we'll see.
He's gonna play a lot of football for Alabama in his first year. If he keeps his nose clean and doesn't get in trouble and learns the system, this kid is going to play a lot of football, just like TJ did, just like Trent did, just like Mark did as freshmen. He's a talent. He's a raw talent, and you cannot keep them off the field, period.
You don't break a 50-year-old high school rushing record and not have a ton of talent.
Yeah, this kid's special, guys. I mean, we keep getting these unbelievably blessed and anointed and special kids into this program. It just blows my mind.
You have to love BAM's radio. We cover not only the current players, not only the players going to the NFL, but the players coming on board. What's the word on Tenpenny tonight? Is he a firm commitment? What kind of player is he, Thomas?
Tenpenny, he's taking official visits, which I think is actually good. Arkansas is a very interesting situation now. Brett Bielema brought Monte Ball along, and Monte Ball had a great career at Wisconsin. The hire of Jim Chaney, former Tennessee offensive coordinator, like we talked about, is it a big bang, knock it out of the park hire? No, I don't think so, but could have an effect, maybe. Tenpenny is a lot built, a lot like Trent Richardson, small, compact, powerful. I don't think he'll have the same impact as Trent Richardson just because he's coming in with two other excellent tailbacks, but he's got that potential. He could be the guy that can bounce off folks. I mean, I hate to compare a kid to Trent Richardson because Trent Richardson was absolutely fabulous. You don't get drafted in this current NFL in the top five unless you're just basically a freak.
Oh, and basically break Jim Brown's rookie reps.
That too. Good call.
You know, the kid that wasn't supposed to be crap by that old douchebag of a fart of a man, you know, calling out my boy and then turning around and look at him. Trent's doing nothing but putting up numbers. So, hey, Jim, I know you're not listening to BAMS tonight, but you got a boil on my butt you can suck right now. So, anyway.
Wow.
Jim Brown, the wannabe actor. With his great Academy Award-winning role in Mars Attacks.
And his boil-sucking lips. Well, he swatted the wrong damn hornet's nest when he swatted the Alabama Nation.
What a stupid statement. I mean, Trent Richardson, if anybody was ever built for the NFL, it's Trent
Richardson. But he's a sad legend. He just kept saying it. It wasn't like he said it. Who did we just lose? I don't know.
Oh, you.
No, it was Legend. Anyway, we'll bring the caller on. Legend will come back on. Caller number 319, how you doing tonight, brother?
Yeah, buddy. Hello? Hello? Hello, I cannot hear you. Hello? Yeah, he done me. He done me on that board.
To your friend.
Oh, I hear you now. What happened?
It was on your end. You up there typing away. Whatever you're doing, quit.
Yeah, whatever you're doing, quit, you dork.
There you go. I haven't heard you in a while, Robert. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I like to hear bring the pain more. Bring the pain, man.
Bring the pain just dropped off, so he's no longer on the call with us. It's all you.
After I let you go, I'm gonna call to bring the pain. I'm gonna say, nice job, good job, way to go to call to bring the pain, so man. Hey, Legend, are you there?
Yeah, he's
back
now.
How you doing? How you doing, Robert? What's up, buddy?
What up, buddy? How you doing, buddy?
Good, man. I seen your Facebook page, and I encourage everybody to befriend Robert, Robert from Iowa, Robert from Waterloo on Facebook. And I'm doing good, my friend. Good to hear you tonight. What you got going on? Welcome to the island.
I want a Doc Daniel. I want Doc Daniel wine, beer wine, man, on the island.
Come on, man. Come on.
Come on, man. Come on.
Come
so,
on, man. Come on.
You guys are killing me. You're kissing each other. Talk some football.
Okay, how about AJ? AJ McKernan, is he going to do it to Notre Dame? Is he going to kick them out at Notre Dame or what?
Personally, Robert, I think AJ, if it were up to me, I'd hand the ball off 100 times and let our collective running backs run up about 450 yards between the three of them until Notre Dame fell over, their pants fell off of them, and their helmets popped off in the third quarter. That's what I would do. But, no, I think AJ is going to have a great game.
Hey, I got a question for – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Legend.
I think that's a great question, Robert. I agree with Bird. I don't think AJ has to do a whole lot in this game. And I think if he has to, though, he's very capable. I've seen the Notre Dame defense, and their secondary hasn't impressed me at times. So I think there'll definitely be opportunities down the field. And what's the word on DeAndre White? Is he going to be able to play in the game?
He tore his ACL. He might be ready for the spring. I don't see him being ready for the game. You do bring up an interesting point with the secondary, and there's a guy down. I work in a law firm with a fellow named Tracy Turner. He does a sports show down here. He's actually an Auburn, former Auburn guy. He played under Pat Dye. He asked me a question, and I'm going to pose it to the panel. How is Notre Dame going to cover Amari Cooper? Because if Notre Dame combo covers Amari Cooper, that is, basically trails him with a corner and plays safety over the top, how are they going to keep a lot of guys in the box to stop Alabama's run?
They're in trouble. I'm telling you, if you analyze this game, Notre Dame is in trouble from the first time they snapped the ball.
I like it. I'm about ready to run out the tunnel.
it's such a big problem. No, it's such a problem because if you look at the Oklahoma game, yes, Notre Dame won by a hefty amount. I think the final score was 30-13 or 30-17, some full score win. But break it down a little more. So Notre Dame's points were a good drive and then a couple of long runs, and Oklahoma doesn't have a good defense. But look at the offensive side of the ball. The Oklahoma slot receiver, which had done a little bit of nothing up until that point, had like 150 yards in the game. And is Alabama going to pass like Oklahoma can? No. A.J. McCarron is not Landry Jones as much as everyone wants him to be. But if you single cover Amari Cooper, just ask what happened to Georgia when they did that. Ask what happened to Texas A&M when they tried to man up on some of Alabama's receivers. That will happen. It's kind of a pick-your-poison kind of thing. Do you hope that you can mash against Alabama's front five or front six or front seven and drop seven or eight guys in the box? Well, what happens when all those two tight end sets suddenly go all over the place in little slants and curls and crossers? That's going to be crazy for the Notre Dame defense. So I think schematically this game is just, if I was Diaco, the Notre Dame defensive coordinator, you would have to medicate me or put me on oxygen because it's going to be such a headache to scheme for. It all starts with the offensive line. Notre Dame is not going to be able to get a lot of pressure. Are they a great pressure team? And not really. But are they going to be able to stop Alabama with six guys? Georgia has just as big a group of guys as Notre Dame does, and look what happened in the SEC championship. But anyway, soapbox off. I apologize, Legend, for stealing your show.
Nah, good stuff, brother. We up in the Church of College Football. Preach on, preach on. Always have your liberty. It's all about the football. But what else you got for us, Robert? Robert must be gone.
Well, we've got another call, Legend. This is our good friend Marty. I'm going to bring Marty on right. Yep. Marty, you're on with Legend. How are you doing tonight, brother?
Great, great, guys. Hey, Legend, I like the way you cleaned up the island, man. You got all them damn beer cans up and stuff. And boy, it sure does look good.
Man, I appreciate it. We had some Auburn folks over. We didn't let them on the island. They just got close to the island. They littered stuff everywhere, man. You can't let them folks know where it told you stuff. You can't.
They rolled the island.
But we got some Tennessee convicts to come out and some orange and clean up the island for us on work release. So we got it looking good tonight. Got it looking good tonight, brother. What's up tonight, Marty? I know you got some football insight for us, brother.
It's all good. It's all good. Hey, you know, I'm going to take off my crimson glasses a little bit just for a little while and set them down for just a minute on this Notre Dame and Alabama game coming up. You know, Notre Dame is or used to be an elite program. I think they have the tradition. I think they have the will to want to get back there like Alabama. You know, but I look at it this way. You know, Alabama, when we started coming back, when Nick Saban came here and he started building the program back, you know, you do remember the 2008 season where we went undefeated just to go to the SEC championship game and lose to Florida in a heartbreaker. You know, I don't think Notre Dame's there yet. I think that Notre Dame's like that season that we had in 2008 where they think they've got there, but they're going to lose right at the end. You know, I just don't think they've played in those big championship games, you know, enough experience to help them. And that's just the way I feel about it. I do feel like they got a good team. I have tried to do some study on Notre Dame and look at their, you know, their front seven. It is a pretty impressive front seven, I have to admit. I don't know how deep the front seven is. You know, if they have get a little banged up there, how much, you know, they're going to be able to come back from that. But, you know, I think Alabama has the edge there because I think Alabama's been there. I think they have had experience in the big games. And the SEC championship game is just about as big a game as the national championship game as far as, you know, the crowd, the excitement and everything. What do y'all think about that?
I think
you're
right.
I got one question, too, for the panel.
Go ahead.
Going into next year, one area of the team that really bothers me just a little bit, and I hadn't heard it talked about much, is our linebacker core next year. The experience at linebacker kind of concerns me a little bit next year, especially if CJ goes out to the draft this year. You're losing Johnson, Mosley. You know, you're going to have DePriest come back, but he's really going to be the only really experienced linebacker we're going to have back there. I know we got some raw talent, and know Ryan Anderson and Hayes and some of the other ones are, you know, got a lot of promise, but, you know, that experience kind of worries me. Bert.
Shoot. Adrian Hubbard's played quite a lot this year. Xavier Dixon has played a lot this year. Dylan Lee played a little bit early as a true freshman, shows great promise. And I tell you, the one to watch out for as far as if CJ...
Did we lose Blip? Sound like we lost Blip, but I'll pick up there and run on with it. I think we'll be in good shape.
The Vol is just a monster.
Go ahead, brother.
No, go for it. Denzel Duvall is the name to watch.
I lost you there for a second, but go ahead with what you were saying. I lost you. I don't know if everybody else did after you said Hubbard.
No, he was good, but basically to repeat, he said that we've got a whole bunch of kids that have played a whole lot of ball this year, so he's not as nervous as Marty, and I agree with Blip. I think we've got just an unbelievably talented group that is ready to step in and fill the shoes, Marty, and every one of those names that Blip just named is a kid that is going to be right.
I think Scotty hit the beam up machine.
I went back. That's what I was in a minute ago.
Yeah, I had a little lag.
The technology on the island is breaking down. We might be under a Notre Dame attack already, but go on, Bird. Say what you said again, brother. Some of us missed it there at the end. We might have lost Bird. Who all we got with us here on the island? We breaking down on the islands. Bear with us. We love football. Thomas, you out there?
Yeah, I'm here. We had a little lag spike there. I think that was actually a Blog Talk burp and not
yeah,
us.
Yeah, no, it's 100% Blog Talk.
Okay.
Oh, that's good.
Okay. Go ahead, bro. Pick it up where you was at, though, bro.
Yeah, I was just reiterating what Blip said. It's right now, guys, I got to tell you, I can't get overly upset or worried about any phase of the Alabama program. And if anything, and you guys know me well enough, if the one weak link in the armor to me has been Bobby Williams. And if Bobby is going to take a front,
thank you.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the one score that Auburn put on us last year was because of special teams. And again, we've had the question mark on two or three games this year on whether or not the special teams guys were ready to play football. Hell, in the Georgia game, when we tried to do the fake punt. The fake punt worked, but the special teams guys were not prepared. They blew it on the clock. And so,
yeah, I thought
you know,
we got bad out-coached on special teams.
It's time for Bobby to do something else. It was time 2 years ago for Bobby to do something else. He is the one weak link in that entire impregnable suit of armor that Nick Saban has put together. And if they found a way now for him to gracefully bow out and take a front office job and still be hooked with the program, God bless him. And then let's get somebody in and fix that one piece. And it's not like it's broken, but it's the one area that you continually just see. I pull my hair out. I go, why? Why? You know, you got every one of the best athletes in the country on the field right now. He's not all the walk-on scrubbies. And why did they miss that tackle? Why didn't they pick up that lane? They, you know, it's called lane football. You just fill the lane, and guess what? Things happen. So that's all coaching. And, that's the only thing that I see as being a big change for next year, and it's a change for the positive.
Yeah, and I agree with you entirely. I mean, if you put a Virginia Tech-like special teams with this Alabama team, as physical as they are, I mean, you are sure enough talking about a team that would even become more of a monster than what they are now. And Georgia out-coached them horribly, I thought, on special teams. You nailed that, Bird. But one area I would like to throw out to the panel, and I hope Marty's still with us, get his input too. Who's the next quarterback behind A.J. McCarron?
Well, A.J. next year. I mean, A.J.'s not going anywhere. He's already, I don't know if you heard today, legend, but he stated he's absolutely coming back. So he'll be back for his last year at Alabama. But I think, and I've been an Alec Morris fan for the past year and a half, I think the day that Alec Morris steps on the field, people are going to go, oh, my gosh, where did this kid come from? To me, Morris is the heir apparent to the point that I think Sims is talking about transferring Ely. You know, like I said earlier in the show, the only way he's going to make a Daniel Moore painting or a Steve Skipper painting is if he's holding the football in the crucial play. Ely ain't going to play any time for us. He's just not
on the field goal, huh?
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I got a little bit of inside information on Alex Morris, if I got just a moment.
Yeah, go, baby.
Go for it.
Hey, I got a sales associate out in Plano, Texas that I deal with all the time, and his daughter is actually dating Alex Morris. Even in high school when Alabama was recruiting him and all, and he told me if we get Alex Morris, he said, man, we've got an unbelievable quarterback, because he said in the system that he played out there in high school, man, they take their football serious in those leagues he played in. It was at a high-level high school league. And he did unbelievable. He thought he was really, really, really high on the kid. And not just because his daughter was dating him, but he just said, I've just seen him up close several, several times. He is the real deal. He kept telling me, man, y'all are going to get a great quarterback.
The kid's a stud. I mean, out and out a physical stud. Not only is he a stud, he's been well prepared. And as you say, Marty, he came out of the toughest high school league in America, Dallas 6A ball. The stadium he plays in, guys, seats 55,000 seats, and they fill it up. Okay? I mean, this is not Hoover playing Vestavia with 3,000 people, and we think it's a big deal. This is 55,000 people every Friday freaking night in Texas, in Dallas, Texas, for high school football. It's a different world. I'm telling you, they play college-level ball down there. The kid's been well-coached. He's a specimen. He's very bright, and he can run the ball as well as he can throw it a country mile. He can. You can take AJ, and you can put G-Mac together, and he can throw it farther than both of them together, period.
Well,
big kid, too. He's like 6'3", 225, man. He's a big
and he's quick.
Kid.
He can carry the ball.
He can run the football.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. I'm telling you, I am so excited. He will become the understudy for AJ next year. They'll take his red shirt off. That will give him 2 years of learning the system, folks. He will now know that offense, and when he steps in, you won't have one blink of the eye outside of, you know, the timing that is so critical that comes between the quarterback and your offensive line. Guys, this guy is going to be able to step in and be able to create from day one. Plus, I think he's a perfect cog in the in Coach Nuss's offensive system. It's just, you know, this is a recipe for a dynasty. Jet Legend, you've been saying it for the past 2 years. It is. Let's not get complacent. I feel Alabama Nation's getting complacent. It's like, oh, who got tickets to the big ball game? No, I don't know. I don't care. You know, it's like, uh-uh. This is as big a deal today as it was 3 years ago. Don't let it get old, folks. Stay on top of your game and stay on top with your crimson glasses. Okay, off soapbox.
Well,
preach on, brother, preach on. And these are the days that you dream of. These are the days. Go ahead, Marty. I know you got some more, brother. Go ahead.
No, that's about all I got tonight on that. Just, you know, I do agree what I heard a little bit earlier, that I do think that Blake Sims is going to be gone. I don't think he's going to stick around to
They'll repurpose him. You know what? It may be like Callaway, where, you know, they think he's such a great athlete, guys, that if you're an athlete, you're going to play at Alabama. There's no two ways about it. And if you can play football, they're going to find a place for you. And it may be that they just find a different spot for him. Now, if he's got his head and a heart set on playing quarterback, QB for somebody, then he may go and he may – you know, the word that the jungle drums that I've heard beating, it's Va-Tech. Well, think about it. He can run and he can throw. He's a perfect Va-Tech kid. If Geno Smith takes off and goes to the league, which he is, then guess what? That may be a great spot for Blake Sims.
Geno's at West Virginia.
Oh, well, whatever. They play. Thank you.
One of those Virginia schools.
It's the Lore Tab talking. Come on, man.
I just wanted to.
Let me throw this name out, though, and see what Thomas says. Batman.
Oh, God. Yes, that's what I was trying to bring up.
Red shirt.
I don't know. Cooper Bateman will come in this spring, and this is playing a what if game here. But let's assume that Phillip Sims transfers. Philip Ely.
Blake Sims.
Yeah, but no. I know. I'm saying. Let's assume Sims transfers. Then you have Philip Ely, Alec Morris, and Cooper Bateman. Parker McLeod will either gray shirt or red shirt for absolutely sure. I think Philip Ely has hit his ceiling. If he is happy being the second team / practice squad guy at Alabama, great, but I don't think he's going to get further than that. Cooper Bateman is an interesting prospect. This year he kind of had a Matt Barkley issue. If you remember Matt Barkley, when he came out, his junior year, he was National Gatorade Player of the Year at Mater Dei in California. Then, his senior year, basically everybody ahead of him in grad school year, he only threw like 25 touchdown passes to like 15 to 18 interceptions.
Nice.
Cooper Bateman's team this year out in Utah is 3-8. And the only reason they're scoring points is because Cooper Bateman is able to do literally something with nothing. The kid has gone through it, and I realize Utah is not Texas, but the kid's gone through it. He's shown some mental toughness.
He's going to come in and he's going to give Morris a run. I don't know how that's going to play out. I haven't seen enough of Cooper Bateman against Alec Morris to make a good judgment call on that. But to say that Bateman's going to come in and Alec Morris is just going to walk away with the job, that's not going to happen. There's going to be a competition for either second string or third string, depending on who transfers or who does what ahead of them.
That'd be wonderful, but I don't see it happening. I really don't. I think he's got a long way to go to learn the offense, and Alec is there. And that's one of the keys under this, is you have got to spend a bunch of time studying film and understanding the nuances of exactly how Saban wants that thing to click. And he's just not going to hand the ball unless we have three guys go down with blown-out knees to Bateman. I mean, it would have to be just extreme unction. I think you'll see a red shirt on him. I don't think he will even come close to pushing Morris for any type of playing time next year. Now, the following year, yes, he could. But this next year, I really don't think so. But know what? That's hell, it's just, we're at the end of this year, and he isn't even on campus yet. And, you know, we got a long way to go, and I may be so full of soda crackers, it's not even funny. So,
well, it's an excellent problem to have. But before, a red shirt precludes anything, if Greg McElroy had gotten hurt, even against Texas, A.J. McCarron's red shirt would have been thrown on the bonfire, and he would have come in.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, that's what we're saying the same thing. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
I'm going to get out of here, and I just want to thank y'all, man, for putting this show on and doing what y'all do and putting the time in. Believe it, it's definitely worth it what y'all do, because we enjoyed it out here in Radio Land listening to it, man. And, God bless you. Legend, take care, man.
Hey, Marty, we appreciate you, man. We appreciate all the callers and all the listeners to BAMS Radio. Give a shout-out to one of our sponsors, Wing Out Sports Grill at the old Grumps location on 3rd Avenue South and 25th Street. The best wings in the state. Swing by at the old Grumps location. They have a legend special on the menu. Yes, you heard it right. Got my own meal named after me now.
I have
my
yet
belly's
to,
a testimony to, it.
To taste one of their wings, legend, so you're going to have to put up or shut up. I mean, it's I'm ready for some of these Wing Out wings, because they do sound terrific.
They are good, brother. They are good.
I appreciate your ecumenical taste in food, and so I'm not going to argue with it, but I'm going to tell you, I'm calling you out. Put up or shut up.
All right. I'm going to put up on this one. Hey, but I will say this about, I call him Batman. And remember the name, because I'm nicknaming Cooper Bateman, and I call him Cooper Batman. I heard somebody say, and the scout that we all know whispered the name, could be the next Johnny Football. So watch out. Watch out. Somebody told me one time that Alabama, the one thing Alabama lacks is a true playmaker at quarterback, somebody that can take the ball, if the play breaks down, take off and make a play like we see the extraordinary quarterbacks across college football do. If you could add that type of quarterback to the power running game at Alabama, oh, my, my, my. Now we are talking 16, 17, 18. Be careful. Nick Saban is ever evolving at the University of Alabama. And a great point by Bird tonight. I think getting rid of Bobby Williams is a part of that evolution that has been way, way overdue.
I actually am going to take the opposing view here real quick about a real mobile quarterback, and I'm going to kind of reference the NFL. Very rarely does a Tom Brady-type quarterback, which is really what Saban wants, have to extend plays in a crazy way to make it work. Can he do it? Absolutely. Tom Brady did a crazy spin move earlier this year to spin out of a tackle and throw a ball 50 yards down the field for a touchdown. But that's the exception. If I'm Nick Saban, and by extension, if I'm an Alabama fan, I want a cerebral guy. I want a guy that will come up to the line of scrimmage, look, see five guys down, two linebackers, 2 yards off the line of scrimmage, the corners are 6 yards off, And he's like, all right, guys, we're going to run a slant because those linebackers are blitzing, and you're going to run until you can run no more because the safeties are off, and we're going to go score a touchdown now, and there isn't a damn thing they can do about it. So I would want a cerebral guy more than a really mobile guy. Even though Robert Griffin and Cam Newton are lighting the NFL on fire, I love watching Tom Brady and Peyton Manning play, and I kind of see some of that with AJ's game, being able to call various plays. I mean, AJ McCarron has as much protection work as Barrett Jones does, and that's pretty rare in a college quarterback, let alone a junior college quarterback. So I guess that's just my side of that, the athletic versus cerebral kind of idea.
Well, I like that because it goes back to what Bird says. That may give Morris the advantage due to he is more that type of quarterback than Bateman. So that would definitely give him the advantage. Me, myself, give me a guy that can run for 4,000. I mean, run for 1,000 and throw for 4,000. But I do see what you're saying. A good example of that is Andrew Luck of the Indianapolis Colts. He's not that scrambler-type quarterback, but I do believe he's the next Tom Brady of the NFL and probably will put up two or three championships in that system at Indianapolis. Man, we getting football's a hell of a drug. We getting deep into football tonight, eh?
I'll say this about Alec Morris, and this is something you guys need to realize. I think this young man is the tallest quarterback we've had at Alabama in maybe ever. I mean, he stands, and he's a true 6'3", and he may be 6'4", guys. He can see over the line. This is the first quarterback Alabama's had that can flat see down the field. And tell me that doesn't make a big difference whenever you step out of the pocket and all of a sudden your field of vision expands by about 100 degrees on both sides. There are some intangibles here. Just look at the size of this kid that's coming in, and not just the athletic ability, because they're all great athletes, not to take a thing away from anybody. But this kid, from a size and just the ability to see the field, it's like a Roethlisberger. Do you think Ben Roethlisberger's got or Peyton Manning or some of these guys that stand 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", I think Roethlisberger's closer to 6'5", that it gives them an advantage? Hell yeah, it does.
Well, look at Drew Brees. Drew Brees, in the Peyton system, has flourished. It has helped that he's had two All-Pro guards to clear out his throwing lanes for him. So, and Drew Brees is 6'1 on a good day.
On a good day. Well, but again, it's Brees is a special cat. This is in this game. If you've got size behind that line, it's a tangible. It's something that's measured and that absolutely I think accrues back to the benefit of the entire team, because then your checkoffs are better. Your first guy's covered. It's easy to see the second guy. He's covered. Now all of a sudden you've got your safety valve, and you know exactly where that is because he's not covered up by a defensive lineman or an offensive lineman because you can't see him. So hell. We don't. What do we know? We're sitting here on an internet talk show,
having fun on an internet talk show.
Oh my!
Hey, I like to get the panel's opinion. I'm gonna go ahead and call us the experts because they called them folks the expert on ESPN, and they had Mark Godfrey up there one time.
Only spurts they got to clean out of their underwear. Bless. Give me a break. That's the kind of spurt some boys are.
But I like to hear about, because we'll get more and more into this as recruiting season comes and as this season turns into next season. It never stops 365 on BAMS. But I'd love to hear what our offensive line may look like for next year, because now you're talking about Fluker, Jones, and Warmack out of that mix. What can we expect, Blip, Thomas, Bird? I mean, What is the next generation of linemen at the University of Alabama next year?
Well, I'm actually going to go with what Carey's line is, because I think he and I are on the same tack. He's got Cyrus Kwanjo at left tackle, Ari Kwanjo at left guard, Ryan Kelly at center, Steen still at right guard, and then Leon Brown, the JUCO transfer coming in the spring, at right tackle, starting against Virginia Tech this upcoming year. I think it's a good line. I had the pleasure of being around Ari Quanjo a few times when I was still at the University of Alabama. He's a great young man. He's smart as a whip. And if he can get there and, you know, get his legs under him real quick, is he going to be Chance Warmack? No. There's probably one or two Chance Warmacks on the planet at any given time. But he can be a very solid left guard. And Leon Brown, you don't get recruited by Saban as a junior college transfer unless Saban thinks you can come in, compete for playing time, and play at a high level. And Ryan Kelly, again, I'm going to steal some of Carey's thunder. People view Kelly as a mini Barrett Jones at center. So I think that's what you're a probable lineup. We'll obviously know more in the spring, but that's if I had to put money down on who's going to start that first snap at Virginia Tech, those are the five I'd go with.
Ryan Kelly, the number one offensive lineman out of the state of Ohio when he came out. Also, Trey DePriest was the number one linebacker in the state of Ohio. So a couple of Ohioans there making a big difference on this team and will be true anchors next year on this team. But what about the tight end position, Thomas? We break it down next year here. We'll also lose some folks from that position this year.
I think he had a call of nature, boss.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'll cover that.
Cover it, Blip, as Thomas runs down the island looking for one of our pine trees.
Coming back, you know, you've got Harrison Jones. You got Barrett Jones' younger brother, Harrison Jones.
Who's played
a little bit this year.
And played good, by the way.
And played well, as has Brian Vogler. I think both of those kids are similar bodies, similar playing style. You would probably refer to both of them more as blocking tight ends than you would see them running out into the flats and catching passes. You've also got Malcolm Fachiang coming back, who is a Michael Williams type of body. Big, athletic, can handle the blocking, but can also handle the pass catching. I think the big question mark is, does this superstar, five-star true freshman impact the tight end position in O.J. Howard? O.J. Howard is built more like Julio Jones than he is like Michael Williams. And some people have speculated that even though he's lined up at tight end in high school, that he may be better suited at wide receiver in Alabama's system. Now, I think they're going to still use him as a tight end. But think back to the season where Brad Smellie was so productive catching the ball. They would line Brad up in all variety of positions, and he might start out in formation in a tight end position, but they'd roll him out and slide him out into the flat, and he'd end up in a slot position, he'd end up in a wing. So I think they're going to use O.J. Howard a lot like they used Brad Smellie, and he is much more of your pass catcher offensive threat than maybe a Vogler or a Jones, which are more the blocking tight end. But I think they're going to have a healthy mix of those four kids see the field, and you'll get different looks. And I would be excited to see us go back to something that Coach McElwain did, which was run a lot of two tight end set, and in some strange circumstances, he would run three tight end sets. I think we've got the personnel to pull it off.
We're breaking it down like a jigsaw puzzle tonight.
Well, two tight end sets were Alabama's primary set in the SEC championship when they had all the success running the ball. And just to tack on something for O.J. Howard, you don't get rated as a top 10 player in the country as a tight end very often. The kid has athleticism just completely coming out his ears. He will be one of those absolute matchup nightmares. I don't want to call him Aaron Hernandez, Rob Gronkowski, because those are real special players in the NFL. But you can look at the Gronks and the Jimmy Graham archetypal tight end as a potential matchup nightmare. How the hell do you cover a 6'6 guy that can run like a wide receiver but can block and has really good hands? Do you put a linebacker on him? okay, one cut the tight, then O.J. Howard's 10 yards down the field. Do you put a safety on him? O.J. Howard will box out 9-10 safeties in college football just right now. So it's just a terrible matchup problem with that player specifically. I'm really looking forward to seeing O.J. Howard come out for Alabama. That's a player I don't get excited for freshmen very often, but that's one that I'm kind of salivating seeing the field.
Could he end up on defense?
Yes.
No.
You don't think so, Blip?
No. He is too good as a dual threat. He's too good as your third offensive tackle in a blocking scheme at chipping an oncoming defensive end and protecting the quarterback. And you never know. Is he going to stay in protection? If he goes out into the flats, he's just every bit as potent with the ball in his hands. How many tight ends do you feel like have that explosive, big play potential? You know, when every time Julio Jones touched the ball, you knew he could have taken it to the house. Every time O.J. Howard touches the ball, he has the potential to take it to the house, and not a lot of tight ends have that. So he's a scary weapon for an offensive coordinator, and in an intelligent OC's hands, which I think Nussmeier is, I think that you're going to do an awful lot with him to keep the defensive coordinator on the other side of the field guessing your every move, and you've got to constantly watch him, and if you don't, he'll torch you.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
The one thing you said, Blip, and I think that's really important, is not knowing what an O.J. Howard-type player is going to do. If you put a linebacker on O.J. Howard and he's at the end of the line, you know, just broken down in his stance or whatever, that linebacker has to read what he's going to do. And it's that split second between realizing and acting that can make or break a play. You don't know what he's going to do, so you can't just rush into him and try and get a block, or you can't, or try and get a jam or whatever. It's the not knowing that is a crucial thing, because when you're talking about a player of O.J. Howard's capacity, exactly like you said, Blip, he's explosive with the ball. It's not somebody where you can just kind of olay him at the line, let him get free, and hope you're not going to pay the price for it. It's a really, really dangerous thing. But anyway, Legend, I apologize for cutting you off. What questions do you have?
No, that I was just enjoying it, brother. You're doing great. And I will say this. Remember, once upon a time, there was a tight end of similar athletic ability show up at the University of Alabama by the name of Cornelius Bennett. I would also like to – I don't know what our time is, Bird, but I'd like to hear – somebody asked me today about Eddie Williams. Is he still on this team, or what's the deal with Eddie Williams?
I don't know. So, Blip, Thomas?
I think Eddie's problem is exactly what you guys just talked about. Out of high school, he was one of the top safety prospects in the land. And he was so skilled, so athletic, that in spring ball and in practice, we gave him a little bit wide out. And candidly, I think moving him from defense to offense and then back to defense probably cost him some of the progress that he would have otherwise made. And let's face it, a true freshman was going to have a very difficult time getting past Ha-Ha Clinton Dix and Robert Lester on the depth chart. Robert's going to move on to the NFL, and that's going to open up a safety position. Whether that safety position is manned by Landon Collins or Eddie Williams, I don't know. But I suspect they will find a way to get both of those kids involved in the defense next year. They're just both of them are too solid to keep off the field. I think he will ultimately, especially if we get Robert Foster, like Kerry said earlier, if Robert Foster signs with Alabama, Eddie Williams will stay on the defensive side of the ball.
I think it's kind of a B.J. Scott problem. He's hyper-athletic. They were trying to get him on the field, and they tried to do too much with him, and they kind of instead of giving him one specific role, they tried to teach him two or three, and it kind of retarded his overall progress. So I completely agree with you, Blip.
Yeah, because I thought B.J. Scott was a better wide receiver than he was a defender. I really did. I thought they missed the boat with B.J. And sometimes it's a matter of numbers. Bird, what are we looking like? We about out of here, brother? Or what
we're about out of here. You know what? It's been a great show tonight, guys. It's been an awful lot of fun. I'll tell you, what's even going to be more fun is next week when we get some guests on that are from Notre Dame and get to have some snappy repartee with the other side of the fence and find out where their heads are at. So BAMS Radio, once again on Wednesday night, is your place to be, and it has been an absolute hoot to put the show on the air. Legend, Blip, CC Bama, and, of course, the irregular, most regular, Thomas Doc Watts. So I'm going to sign it out, and I'm going to take us out of here, guys, a little something different. I'm going to go ahead and take us out of here with a little Maori war chant for my boy Jim.
RTI, though.
We'll talk later.